Lucy and Jeff going for walks and talks, talk about banksters and Bitcoin and the apocalypse and stuff. It's Lucy and Jeff and tacos and kisses.
How are you doing today, Lucy?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good.
So today, Lucy, we're going to talk a lot about the Illuminati.
Oh, no COVID?
Yeah, still a little bit of COVID, too.
I'm so tired of the COVID. But anyway, I do like the walks. And I like eating my tacos and giving my kisses.
Yeah, Lucy, we're not going to talk too much about COVID today. We're going to talk quite a bit about what's really going on in the world. I kind of realized that I've said so many times nothing about what they say about history is true, but I haven't... What's going on, Lucy? But I haven't really gotten too deep into that stuff, and we're just going to scratch the surface today, but thought it'd be important to kind of point these things out, because even like a lot of smart libertarian people are completely unaware of all the nefarious secret society type stuff that really does essentially rule the world. So we're going to get into that. And I just finished my first breathwork session with Luis Fernando Mises, who works with us at the Dollar Vigilante. And it was pretty amazing. Basically, it's like I just did DMT. So again, kind of perfect that we're going to talk about this sort of stuff, because it's all about opening your third eye, about becoming really conscious about what's really going on in the world. And a lot of people will say they don't want to know because it's too scary, but it's better if you know this stuff, I think. But if it's too scary, fast forward probably about halfway through this video. And then we're going to get into crypto and stuff. Tons of interesting crypto stuff going on. And, well, at the very end, so if you can make it through this whole video, I'm going to show you how you can get a free Dollar Vigilante and Crypto Vigilante subscription, 1 year subscription, which is worth about $800. And it's perfect timing, because on June 21st, the Crypto Vigilante will be releasing their next pick. They only have about one a year, because we're very thorough. And they spend months on each of them, going over every detail of it. But their last one was Pirate Chain at 6 cents. Currently about $6. Not bad. Actually went up to 16 for a bit. And we expect the next one to do quite similar. Pirate Chain really from 6 cents to 16, I think it was up 30,000% in 8 months. And we think we have another one that's going to do very similar. So if you want that, stay tuned to the end or just fast forward. I don't care. Do whatever you want. But where's Lucy? Okay, let's get into this, because this is a lot of information. But basically, what we're going to talk about is what's really going on in the world. And it's crazy, and hardly anyone knows. And we started at the beginning there with that video game compilation, and it's all got the all-seeing eyes and the pyramids and all those games. In fact, they're pushing it so hard now that, like, my kids brought up the Illuminati to me like a couple years ago, and they knew so much about it. And apparently it's from all the video games and stuff. So they're actually, for whatever reason, they're not even really trying to hide it much anymore. And it could be because they think they've won all this sort of stuff. They're going to keep the world totally enslaved. And they think they've got it so under control that they're just starting to tell people what they really are now, which is basically kind of like Satanists is what they really are. And, or what could be, is their time is coming to a close. This is something I believe, and this is what a lot of people talk about. Even the return of Jesus that a lot of people talk about. To me, that's another way of saying that is a return of Christ consciousness. And that could be happening too. And there was that whole 2012, the Mayan thing. The Mayans, very smart. A lot of these older civilizations were incredibly smart. We appear to be, as a whole, dumber than all of them. Because the people who control everything you see in the media, governments, all that kind of stuff, corporations, they do their best to like make sure no one really knows what's going on. So let's start with this. Star Wars. You know, it's amazing watching some of these movies again. I haven't watched Star Wars in like 30 years, I don't think. But when I watched it as a kid, it was just a fun movie, right? About this guy, Luke Skywalker, and he's fighting the Empire. And very similar to The Lord of the Rings, which I didn't realize too, was my favorite book when I was a kid. Lord of the Rings. It's like a size of a phone book. And I loved it. But I just thought it was a great story about dwarves and elves and all that kind of stuff. Little did I realize at the time, the entire book, Lord of the Rings, is about essentially the control of the world by sort of these sort of people, which we're going to get into. And especially the ring of power, that's actually basically government. So in The Lord of the Rings, when the ring race come in on their black horses, they're all dressed in black, they start just trying to kill all the hobbits. The hobbits are basically anarchists or libertarians. They're just lighting off fireworks, smoking weed. They have their disputes just like anyone else, but it's all pretty much fine until the Ring of Power comes along and basically destroys everything. And only Frodo had the used the Force, you could say, to bring back the Star Wars part, to have enough strength to get rid of the Ring of Power. And very much like in Star Wars, I just thought it was a great movie about fighting the Empire. Well, the Empire is essentially what we're talking about today. The globalists, the New World Order types, Illuminati, there's so many names, Jesuits, and we're going to get into the Knights of Malta quite a bit. And it's funny too how so many people will watch a movie like that and cheer for Luke Skywalker against the Empire, and then they go and vote, pay their taxes to the Empire. It's amazing how people just can't see these sort of things. And even with Luke Skywalker using the Force, that essentially, to me, is becoming a high consciousness, which you can generally do by things like meditation and self-work. And breathing, breath work, stuff like that. And then you become incredibly aware of what's going on, and you become much stronger. And that's essentially what Star Wars is all about.
Master, moving stones around is one thing. This is totally different.
No different. Only different in your mind. You must unlearn what you have learned.
All right, I'll give it a try.
No, try not. Do. Or do not. There is no try. For my ally is the Force, and a powerful ally it is. Life creates it, makes it grow. Its energy surrounds us and binds us. Luminous beings are we, not this crude matter. You must feel the Force around you, here, between you, me, the tree, the rock, everywhere. Yes, even between the land and the ship.
And of course, the same people who put out all this stuff are the ones who make a lot of these movies. Like, I think someone came out and said, I think it was Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks are pedophiles, which would not be surprising. That's basically what Hollywood's all about. And he was like a fairly famous guy. He was in a movie. And then soon after that, he was thrown off the top of a bridge. And Tom Hanks said, basically, he alluded to it, that they were going to do that to him. I'll just play a little bit of that here.
Steven Spielberg is a pedophile. Yep. See how easy that was, Corey? I didn't need $10 million. I just said it. Oh, I'm not going to talk about Tom Hanks either, who is also a pedophile. Tom Hanks, folks, is a pedophile. I'm sorry if this is the kind of bursting your bubble, all this information is new. Tom fucking Hanks, guys. Pedophile. Called out, no response. There's this girl, Sarah Ruth Ashcraft, on Twitter, who has been accusing Tom Hanks of raping her when she was 13. Her dad sold her to Tom Hanks. She's been accusing him for months and months and months and months and months. He's never addressed it. I saw the gun allegations, and I saw him like, oh, they're just jokes. I'm like, bro, I know who you are. I know you. I've met you. Is Oprah a pedophile? Well, let's see. Hanks, Weinstein, I mean, the company she keeps, as rich as she is, I don't care. I've already been blacklisted. They can't double blacklist me. They can try to kill me. You know, good luck with that.
So yeah, quite possibly people like Steven Spielberg and all them are all in the big club, the Illuminati, whatever you want to call it. And it's amazing how they throw in so much of their stuff into these movies. Like, here's the Empire. And they've got their black and their red guys. Well, here's an Illuminati initiation ritual. Looks basically the same. They hide everything in plain sight. And I'm going to play a little bit here about the Knights of Malta. Just as a sort of intro teaser into what we're going to be talking about.
Here are the facts. Originally known as the Knights Hospitaller, the Sovereign Military Order of Malta dates back to about 1048 AD, when European knights on the Crusade became affiliated with a hospital located in Muristan, Jerusalem. This is one of the oldest Catholic religious orders, and it is also the oldest surviving order of chivalry in the world. Today, this order focuses on humanitarian aid rather than military campaigns. It has diplomatic relations with 104 countries, but operates in 120. To the mainstream world, the Sovereign Military Order of Malta is a force for good, providing invaluable medical assistance to the impoverished and to regions racked by natural disasters. However, to conspiracy theorists, the Knights of Malta are more than a global group of humanitarians. They're an independent army bent on world domination. Here's where it gets crazy. Part of that is true, to an extent. The order is considered an independent subject of international law, meaning it is a quasi-independent sovereign entity, with some of the international rights given to actual countries. Yet the order itself is not a state. It holds no territory, and its members are citizens of countries across the globe. Being a Catholic organization, the order still holds allegiance to the Vatican and the Pope, and their unusual legal status does not in itself indicate a conspiracy. However, this order has been the subject of numerous conspiracy theories over the course of its nearly 1,000-year-old history. Members of the order have been accused of everything from corporate misbehavior to enabling the rise of Hitler. Additionally, members of the order have been accused of helping Nazis and SS troops escape after the fall of Germany and the conclusion of World War II through the use of networks similar to the famous Underground Railroad. These escape networks were conventionally called Vatican rat lines. The conspiracies have not stopped in the modern age, and concerns about the order are not relegated to people on the fringes of society. Consider Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Seymour Hersh, who exposed the My Lai massacre and the White House's infamous assassination squad. On January 17, 2011, Hersh mentioned the Knights of Malta in a speech to the Georgetown University campus in Doha, Qatar. Hirsch alleged that a large percentage of the Special Operations Command and the Joint Special Operations Command in the United States are either members of or supporters of the Knights of Malta. Hirsch went on to state that order members and supporters saw their mission against Islamic fundamentalism as a crusade. Hirsch was roundly criticized for these statements. Yet Hirsch's claims have also garnered some support outside of the realm of conspiracies, based mainly on the fact that members of the order have also been influential members of government or intelligence agencies. So what is the Sovereign Military Order of Malta? Today, it's somewhere between a state and a humanitarian NGO. But to conspiracy theorists, it's a powerful organization on a mission. What is that mission exactly? Humanitarian aid or something they don't want you to know?
You know, it's amazing. Most people have probably never even heard of the Knights of Malta. And that's exactly how these sort of things work. Or even like the Jesuits. And then if they think about the Freemasons, they just think, oh, they're just a bunch of nice guys who help out the community. Everything in this world is the opposite of what it looks like, generally, on those sort of levels. I'm not saying, like, every single person's, you know, the opposite of what they look like or anything like that. But in the grand scheme of things, whatever most people are told is usually the exact opposite of the truth. And we've covered how they control so many things. It's unbelievable. Like, you got to give these guys credit. Like, they're really good at what they do. They control the Pope, who is the head of the Catholicism and the Vatican Bank. They invented and control the euro and seek to destroy all sovereign nations. They have had permanent observational status at both the UN and EU since 1994. They have either infiltrated or invented World Petroleum Council, World Bank and Treasury, World Trade Organization, International Monetary Fund, Bank of International Settlements, World Central Bank, Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, Club of Rome, Garters and Pilgrims, Freemasonry. They have control of some of the major banks, insurance, entertainment and energy corporations, food, pharmaceuticals, chemicals, transport and mining industries. They create many false front charities. They profit from war and arms and have their fingers in almost all the pies in all areas of the world. The Sovereign Military Order of Malta, 900 years old. It has the smallest sovereign nation in the world, situated in Rome. They protect the Jesuit Roman Catholic Order. They control the British Empire, which controls 54 Commonwealth nations. Nelson Mandela removed the wars for the order. We'll get more into Nelson in a bit. They control the Dutch Empire. They control King Carlos of Spanish Mediterranean Empire. The Knights of Malta are the militia of the Pope and are sworn to total obedience by a blood oath, which is taken extremely seriously and to the death. As a member of the Knights of Malta and by virtue of your blood oath of obedience to the Pope, you're required to support to the death the desires of the head of the Order of the Knights of Malta, in this case, Pope Francis, over and above any other allegiance you may feel or pretend to feel toward any other loyalty. Most royals are Knights of Malta. A few examples: the Queen of the United Kingdom, Queen of Netherlands, King of Spain, Grand Duchess of Russia. A lot of high-level politicians and businessmen are Knights of Malta. A few examples, and you might notice all of these people are the worst people in the world. David Rockefeller, Henry Kissinger, Amschel Mayor Rothschild, Alan Greenspan, Ted Turner, George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, Rupert Murdoch, Tony Blair, Rudy Giuliani, Joe Biden, Michael Bloomberg. And high-level Nazis were the Knights of Malta. Benito Mussolini, Hermann Göring, Reinhard Gehlen, Heinrich Himmler. Policies and principles of the Knights of Malta. Those who are presently members of the Knights of Malta must, on penalty of death, support those policies advocated by the Vatican. It's not hard for them to do this. They believe in these policies and principles. The policies which are espoused and proclaimed by the office of the Pope are as follows. End of sovereignty for the United States and other countries. Yeah, that's what my book's about. Controlled demolition of the American Empire. You can get it on Amazon, and it's also on Audible. And we actually talk about a lot of this sort of stuff in the book as well. It's quite a long book. The Audible book's 17 hours. and we really just scratch the surface. Other objectives: end of absolute property rights. Sound familiar? You'll own nothing and be happy. End of all gun rights so that people have no way to defend themselves. The new international economic order, world government. The redistribution of wealth and jobs. That's basically socialism and communism. Calls for nations to trust the UN, United Nations. Total disarmament. Promote the UN as the hope for peace. promote UNESCO, the deadly educational and cultural arm of the United Nations, promote interdependence, support sanctions honoring Father Pierre Chardin, the New Age humanist priest, support the belief that the economic principle of traditional Christian or Catholic social doctrine is the economic principle of communism, promote the Pope as the acting go-between for the United States and the Soviet Union. I mentioned a few of people who are in the Knights of Malta before. Here's a few more. I mentioned Michael Bloomberg, the Bush family, Bill Clinton, Ted Kennedy, Henry Kissinger, Nelson Mandela, Rupert Murdoch, Ronald Reagan, Nelson Rockefeller, David Rockefeller, Ted Turner, and Zbigniew Brzezinski. One does not simply join the Illuminati. Basically every U.S. president, Barack Drone Bomber, it's pretty hilarious that no one really knows where he's born. No one really knows who his parents are. There's no record of him in colleges and stuff, like nothing. No one saw him. And yeah, that was president, but the truth's probably a lot closer to this. Here's CIA agent Stanley Dunham and his wife Madeline Dunham. Stanley is George Bush Sr.'s first cousin. These are apparently Barry Sotero, which is actually his real name, his grandparents. Here's someone wrote, what does Barack Drone Bomber and the Unabomber Ted Kaczynski have in common? CIA agent Stanley Durham's distant cousins, including six U.S. presidents, and another president who is Dunham's grandson, James Madison, Harry Truman, Lyndon Johnson, Jimmy Carter, George H.W. Bush, and George W. Bush, plus Barack Obama, his grandson. President Obama's family and former ex-Goldman Sachs executive, ex-Treasury Secretary, and World Bank leader Tim Geithner and his family have been joined together at the hip for decades. Tim Geithner's father worked for the CIA and the Rockefeller-funded Ford Foundation in Asia. Geithner's father was in charge of microfinance for the Ford Foundation for all of Asia. From Wayne Madison's work, we know that President Obama's mother was in charge of microfinance in Indonesia. Geithner's father was Obama's mother's boss. Additional information comes from the discovery that the two universities that Obama attended, Harvard and Columbia, were prime CIA recruiting grounds. The Ford and Rockefeller Foundation continued to fund Columbia's Soviet Studies program through the early 1980s, where Obama was a student. And would anyone care to guess what Obama was studying? Obama was enrolled in a Soviet studies program taught by Zbigniew Brzezinski. And to those who are new to New World Order conspiracies, one might wonder, who is Brzezinski? Brzezinski was the former national security advisor under President Carter, but more importantly, he was also the co-founder of one of the most influential globalist organizations in all of history, the Trilateral Commission. If you know your New World Order history, you have chills going up and down your spine as you read these words. We should be mindful that Brzezinski, in his book Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era, in 1970, that he laid out the New World Order conspiracy to control all nation states and usher in a totalitarian world government. Yeah, it's one big incestuous club. Here's U.S. presidents that are descended from the British and French royalty. The books Burke's Peerage and Baronetage and Burke's Landed Gentry have for 175 years recorded the genealogies of the UK and Ireland's titled and landed families. These are without comparison as a genealogical reference to the influential figures and families of Great Britain and Ireland. They say this, Bush is closely related to every European monarch, both on and off the throne. Gore's family tree, Al Gore, includes Charlemagne and three Holy Roman emperors and England's Edward I. Bill Clinton was born William Jefferson Blythe, but took his stepfather's name as a teenager. Clinton's ancestry can be traced back on his mother's side to King Henry III, who ruled England from 1227 to 1272. He is descended from King Robert I of France. We haven't even mentioned the Rothschilds yet. They're pretty important. Seldom is it mentioned that the Rothschilds, along with other Western bankers and industrialists, financed the rise of Hitler as a bulwark against the Soviets. The ultra-right wing falsely describes the Rothschilds as Jewish bankers, when in fact the Rothschilds are interwoven with the Catholic Church and jointly with the traditional mafia and the American CIA, interlocked with the Vatican Bank, which was pro-Nazi. And here's an article, the Rothschilds are Jesuits. The Jewish Encyclopedia admits that it is a somewhat curious sequel to the attempt to set up a Catholic competitor to the Rothschilds that at the present time, 1905, the latter are the guardians of the papal treasure. If this latter statement is true, the Rothschilds control, in addition to their own fortune, the immense liquid resource of the Catholic Church, which is second only to the Rothschilds in wealth and power. The real power structure. The Treaty of Paris of 1763 designated King George III, arch-treasurer and prince-elector of the Holy Roman Empire. And according to the Encyclopedia Judaica, the Rothschilds bear the title Guardians of the Vatican Treasury. The appointment of Rothschild gave the Black Papacy absolute financial privacy and secrecy. Who would ever search a family of Orthodox Jews for the key to the wealth of the Roman Catholic Church? And I've often quoted Nathan Rothschild, or was it Mayor Amstel Rothschild? In either case, I think this is one Rothschild said this. I care not what puppet is placed upon the throne of England to rule the empire on which the sun never sets. The man who controls Britain's money supply controls the British Empire, and I control the British money supply. Yeah, good for you. Oh, and then there's the Queen. She never dies. And here she is in all of her Knights of Malta gear. In 2008, Queen Elizabeth II knighted Israeli President Shimon Peres for his faithful service in Rome's foremost colony in the Middle East. The Jesuit modus operandi. Masonic Jews are placed in the foreground, while Roman Jesuits and papal knights maneuvering them behind the scenes. And here's the queef with a Freemasonic belt buckle worn by the witch's nurse. And then a week or two ago, this video popped up on my screen. This stuff always happens. Like everything in life, it's basically like a video game. And if you don't pay attention, you won't notice. You'll think it's all just random and all that sort of stuff. But this thing popped up. And I had no idea. My last name, of course, is Bedick from Scotland. There's a town there called Berwick-upon-Tweed. I knew there used to be a Berwick-Bedick castle, and I knew the UK, the Queen, the royalty from Germany, basically, is basically destroyed the Bedick castle and put in like a train station there. But I had no idea what actually took place there hundreds of years ago.
During the reign of King of England, Edward I, in Berwick, the fortifications found inside the town consisted of mainly a ditch, an earthen rampart, and barricades made of timber. Today they wouldn't be considered too strong, but at the time they did do the job to resist the Scots and other possible invaders. The town and the castle had been transitioning from English to Scottish rule a number of times. Edward I would focus his attacks on Berwick to reclaim it for the English, and in spring 1296, he invaded Scotland with his army, crossing the nearby River Tweed. At the time, the river was swollen, but everyone managed to cross the river, except for a young boy who was carried down with the current and drowned. On the same day, the Bishop of Durham helped the English invaders by allowing them to cross the river near to Norham Castle, and the whole English army came together towards Berwick, marching along the Scottish side of the River Tweed, and they tried to force a garrison there inside the castle to surrender. Berwick was a royal burgh, just north of the border, and was Scotland's most important trading port, only second to London in medieval Britain. It was even called the Alexandria of the North, such was its importance. Edward I set up his quarters inside a convent near to a nun's quarters, in the fields around Berwick, around a mile from the town. He waited then 2 days for the garrison to accept the surrender that he had offered. During this downtime, he arranged for his army to camp in a huge field near to the nunnery, and he also knighted a few members of the army. The cluster of English soldiers was huge, and there was a vast array of banners, and then in the distance a king would have been able to see his fleet sitting in Berwick Bay at the mouth of the River Tweed. The crews on board the vessels thought that Edward was planning an assault, and they were hesitant to join at first, but they entered the mouth of the river and sailed towards the camp. The conditions, however, were rather rough, and 3 ships actually made errors, running aground, and these sailors were then attacked by the castle's garrison. A number of crew members were killed in the fighting, whilst others would flee in boats or by desperately swimming to escape the Scottish. The vessels that had been stranded were then burned by the Scots, and this in particular angered the English king, Edward I. He saw this happen, and then wishing to save his fleet, ordered an instant assault on the garrison, directed towards the river and the sea. He commanded his soldiers to then also force their way into Berwick and further into the town. Some Scottish writers state how Edward managed to obtain entrance into the town by cunning means, however the English soldiers were advancing, and some were carrying actually Scottish banners. These soldiers in particular were mistaken by the Scots for reinforcements and were successful in getting past the defences and scaling the barricades. Whilst inside the town, there was little resistance faced by the English. The only opposition was a group of 20 Flemish merchants who held out a strong tower called the Red Hall, and they managed to hold out until the evening, until the tower was destroyed by a fire and all those inside it burned alive. During this attack in particular, the brother of the Earl of Cornwall was killed by a spear to the eye, who was looking up, and he was the only knight who died for the English during this assault. Now this is where things take a rather bloody turn. In Berwick, whilst the English were inside, they inflicted a huge amount of bloodshed onto the townspeople, and completely massacred most who lived inside of the town. It's said by the Scottish writers that they massacred all of whom they found on their entrance, without any distinction of age or gender, so for this we can work out that they killed children and also women. It is debated how many were slain by the English, with one source saying that 7,500 were murdered in cold blood, so many that the streets ran red with blood for 2 days, to the fact that the blood even made the mills near to the river turn. Another account says that 7,000 were brutally massacred, and the accounts of the bloodshed in the streets is also confirmed. Matthew of Westminster also states how there were no fewer than 60,000 put to the sword inside the town, which is an incredibly large amount. Another source also states how the amount massacred was 17,407, and this is a massive amount of people who could have been killed inside of the town. Amongst those who were slaughtered by the English were many gentlemen and soldiers who belonged to the Scots. It's assumed that the carnage inside the town was huge, and Edward is known to have inflicted the most barbarous cruelties on the inhabitants of Berwick. The churches were also said to have given no protection to those who fled inside them, with the English soldiers breaking through the doors and slaughtering many inside the houses of God within the town. The churches were also sacked, with all their riches and ornaments stolen, and the king, to add insult to injury, even housed his horses inside all of the churches after the massacre.
Yeah, that's the royalty. Killing everybody, torturing little kids. And they were doing it in a place where I'm from. Kind of wonder how much of this, like, because I am trying to take out all these guys, but, you know, like, not kill them personally, but make it so their systems are all destroyed. I wonder if there's, like, some level to this I have no idea about, that, you know, reincarnation, I'm back. Who knows? This is the craziest video game ever. Like, all this stuff that happens in the video game is, you could never even dream it up. It's amazing. And you really know who controls things. Pope Francis kissing the hands of David Rockefeller and John Rothschild. Yeah, that's interesting. And who's one person that so many people consider to be a hero? Nelson Mandela. Well, he's in bed with all these guys. Why do you think he's promoted everywhere as such a hero? Because he's one of them. And here's a Rolodex to beat them all. How the late David Rockefeller built up an incredible catalog of 200,000 index cards detailing meetings with everyone from JFK to Nelson Mandela and Donald Trump. Rockefeller, a grandson of oil tycoon and philanthropist John D. Rockefeller, philanthropist, oh, I love that, enjoyed incredible wealth and influence before his death in March at age 101. He was heavily involved overseas, ensuring Chase could do business in even controversial countries, and counted Henry Kissinger among his close friends. Oh, you gotta love, Henry Kissinger is like your best friend. In his Rolodex, Rockefeller details meetings and dinners with U.S. presidents, including Nixon, Kennedy, Ford, Johnson, Eisenhower, and Reagan. The type cards were meticulously maintained and updated with biographical and professional information, including handwritten annotations. A lot of this stuff obviously gravitates around the Catholic Church. And here's something from the Times of Israel, I Am the Devil. According to the Associated Press, the Pope was en route to Lithuania when he was handed a book by Polish photographer Gregorz Galaska that had a beaming St. John Paul II on the cover. Pope Francis said, "Pope Paul, too, was a saint. I am the devil." Yeah, it's amazing how they catch all these photos with these guys with horns. In fact, every Time magazine cover, if you look, they always put the horns from the M behind, especially for the person of the year. It's all there in plain sight. And they have their devil's horn sign. And all the major politicians and people, Barack Dronebomber, always flashing the sign. There's George Bush flashing it. They always throw in the number 33. Here's Joe Biden running. Just text him at 30330. There's many degrees of Freemasonry, but it goes up to the 33rd degree. They always hide in the 666 as well. Here's Nelson Mandela at his 90th birthday concert. 46664. It's in our hands. Okay. Most people, well, not most people. Some people notice that they're always flashing the pyramid, the triangle, everyone. Here's Donald Trump, of course. Angela Merkel. And don't forget the Gothard Tunnel in CERN, where almost all of these type of people, these major politicians, Angela Merkel, I think, was there. Most of them were there. And I think they basically thought they had opened a portal to the underworld, so to speak. And they all went there to celebrate. So these are what the world's politicians, this is what they go and watch. Always got someone in the wings, like, hey, Lucy, where are you? I'm going to talk about your favorite person here. Lucy, where'd she go? I think she's tired of all this stuff. Lucy! Anyway, talk about Greta. One-eyed symbolism, that is absolutely everywhere. Just look up every Hollywood celebrity. They all do the one eye, and Greta is no different. And here's a quote from the Bible, Revelation 17:4. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And here's the queen, and all the witches. You notice they mostly wear purple. That is generally their color. And Joe Biden even had a purple tie. They all wore the purple. And they've got, like, witches in every part of society. There needs to be unrest in the streets. Protesters should not let up. If you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gas station, you get out and create a crowd and you push back on them and you tell them that they're not welcome anymore anywhere. Nancy Pelosi, I just don't know why there aren't uprisings all over the country. Maybe there will be. She would know. And I've talked a lot about how they will do absolutely anything just to keep their power, to keep their control of the world. When someone says the government will never do that, runaway slave patrol, burning the Waco people, alive, kids, all the wars, the government has done and will do that. George H.W. Bush is quoted as saying, if the American people ever find out what we have done, they will chase us down the street and lynch us. Yep. And here's another one of their witches, Elizabeth Warren, who says she's an Indian. She's talking about how Bitcoin requires so much computing activity that it eats up more energy than entire countries. One of the easiest and least disruptive things we can do to fight the climate crisis is to crack down on environmentally wasteful cryptocurrencies.
We've talked a lot today about the dangers that cryptocurrencies pose to our economy. We've talked about the ripoffs, the instability, the extent to which they're used to help criminals with cyber attacks, like the attack on Colonial Pipeline and JBS. But there's another piece too, the adverse environmental impacts of the computing activity used to mint many of these digital currencies in the first place. Bitcoin consumes more energy than entire countries, and it is projected to consume as much energy as all the data centers in the whole world this year.
Yep, they don't want cryptocurrencies to do well. They're trying to do everything to stop it. And of course, what are they using as their main argument for why everyone has to get rid of it? Oh, the man-made global warming. Meanwhile, while they say how bad Bitcoin is for using so much energy, U.S. Christmas lights use more energy than entire countries. And they really don't try to hide any of this stuff. So here's former Prime Minister, Prime Murderer of the UK, Gordon Brown, who says he's going to the G7, where we will decide effectively who lives and who dies.
And on Friday at the G7, we will decide effectively who lives and who dies, who is to be vaccinated and is therefore safe, and who is not to be vaccinated and therefore is at risk. We will decide effectively who lives and who dies.
Yeah, they don't even try to hide it. But more and more people are starting to wake up. Here is President Macron of France. I love how these things happen sometimes. He could have picked like anyone to go up and act like he cares about them, right? That's what he's trying to do there. He's like going over, yeah, it's going to be okay. I'm the prime murderer and I'll keep you guys safe. He picked the one guy who wanted to slap him.
Oh! Oh! Vas-y, casse-toi de là! Enculé!
And I thought Janet Yellen was gone for sure. She was like falling down on stage all the time. And looked like she totally has Alzheimer's and all kinds of stuff. But no, she's back. They resurrected her from being like the Federal Reserve Chairman to now the U.S. Department of Treasury Secretary. Which is funny because the U.S. Department of Treasury has no treasure whatsoever. It has a, it's a box with an IOU in it for like $28 trillion. But that's not what she's there for. She's actually now trying to make it so that there's the whole world gets taxed more. She says it's going to help the world. It's pretty unbelievable.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has called for a global minimum tax rate. The goal, getting other countries on board in order to prevent offshoring. This is a tax rate for corporations. Let's listen.
Competitiveness is about more than how U.S. headquartered companies fare against other companies in global merger and acquisition bids. It's about making sure that governments have stable tax systems that raise sufficient revenue to invest in essential public goods and respond to crises.
Yeah, so she's saying, you know, there's a lot of poor people, all caused by central banking for the most part, and governments. And the thing we need is a worldwide tax. Oh, man. And she also said higher interest rates would be good for the country. The former Federal Reserve Chair said the president's plans would total about $400 billion each year, a level of spending she argued was not enough to create an inflation overrun. So she's trying to create inflation. If we ended up with a slightly higher interest rate environment, it would actually be a plus for society's point of view and the Fed's point of view. Oh yes, rising prices and lowered standards of living for people is a plus for society. Here's Janet getting ready to start her day. There won't be inflation. There is no inflation. Inflation is transitory. Inflation is good. And they have all their useful idiots. There's Paul Krugman of the New York Times. Fiat currencies have underlying value because men with guns say they do. Yeah, they prefer their fiat currency central bank system, which is communist. And they have all their puppets. I hope a lot of people who, you know, thought Donald Trump was actually trying to help them have realized that no, he wasn't. He's pushing these vaxes as much as anyone now. And here's Donald Trump on Bitcoin.
You don't like Bitcoin? You wouldn't invest in Bitcoin? Do you invest in the stock market at this moment?
So not at this moment. I think it's high. So I have not invested in the stock market at this moment. I have in the past, but I have not at this moment. I think it's high. Okay. Bitcoin, it just seems like a scam. I was surprised. You know, with us, it was at 6,000 and much lower. I don't like it because it's another currency competing against the dollar. Essentially, it's a currency competing against the dollar. I want the dollar to be the currency of the world. That's what I've always said.
Yeah, of course he wants the U.S. dollar and fiat fractional reserve central banks to run the monetary system. That's where he's gotten all of his wealth from. He's known as the king of debt. And, yeah, so he's obviously, you know, just like most of them, trying to stop cryptocurrencies. And crypto's been up quite a bit lately, actually. The Bitcoin's around 37,000 now. It's down to like 31,000. I actually was on my way here, and I wanted to buy, but I couldn't. And by the time I got here, it was like 34,000, so I didn't buy. But Pirate Chain's back up near, like, I think $6 again. A lot of things starting to look pretty good again. And a lot of this is based off of pretty huge news when you think about it. With El Salvador, they ran it through in like 2 days. They announced it like 2 days ago, and it's already passed. Now Bitcoin is already legal tender in El Salvador. And I'm no fan of legal tender laws or governments, but that is quite game-changing. El Salvador has become the first country in the world to adopt Bitcoin as legal tender after Congress approved President Nayib Bukele's proposal to embrace the cryptocurrency. And he's moving fast. Now he's already said they want to start doing Bitcoin mining in a volcano. Our engineers just informed me that they dug a new well that will provide approximately 95 megawatts of 100% clean, zero-emission geothermal energy from our volcanoes. Starting to design a full Bitcoin mining hub around it. We're going to mine Bitcoin in a hollowed out volcano and change our profile pics to have frickin' laser beams for eyes. And this has caused just an avalanche of countries, politicians in various countries, all coming out and doing the laser eyes and basically saying they want to do the same thing as El Salvador. And there's a lot of countries, including Mexico. Here's a Mexican politician, Eduardo Hinojosa. I will be promoting and proposing a legal framework for crypto coins in Mexico's lower house. And then here's another Mexican politician, Indira Kempis. Mexico has joined Latin America in the Bitcoin journey. Hopefully Indira Kempis follows through with her laser eyes and helps introduce legislation to bring the Bitcoin standard to Mexico. And in Argentina, who could really use Bitcoin as their main currency, the Argentinian peso collapses every 10 years. It goes into hyperinflation every 10 years. It's done that for about 100 years. They never seem to figure out why. They're always like, well, the guys at the top totally know. They want to destroy everything. But your average person in Argentina is like, I don't know why. It just keeps going to zero. It's because they print tons of it. Here's a tweet. We now have an Argentinian politician joining the laser eyes takeover of South America. Bitcoin is inevitable. It's Francisco Sanchez in Argentina with the laser eyes. And then there's Panama. A congressman in the National Assembly of Panama representing the 8th-7th Circuit as an independent politician has declared his intent to propose Bitcoin-favorable legislation, saying Panama cannot be left behind. So all very interesting. The world's changing very fast. I'm sure the El Salvador real estate companies all of a sudden got like 10,000 requests for information like today from crypto people. And you can include me as one of them. Not that I'm looking to buy necessarily, but I did go check it out. I'm like, because El Salvador is like way cheaper than most places in Latin America. And I was like, I wonder what you can get in El Salvador. And you can get some pretty good, like you can buy islands for less than $1 million, I think. But we'll see if a lot of other countries do it, then, you know, we'll see what happens. But it's very interesting. Like, we're at the end of this financial and monetary system, and some places are just trying to find a way to survive. And a lot of them are looking at Bitcoin, which is very interesting and could portend for much higher Bitcoin prices, obviously. So, yeah, I think I'll start to wrap it up. As I mentioned at the very start, the Crypto Vigilante is giving away a full subscription to Dollar Vigilante and Crypto Vigilante. And just so you know, if you get Crypto Vigilante, Dollar Vigilante comes with it. And they're giving away, I'll read this tweet from them. We're giving away a Dollar Vigilante Premium and Crypto Vigilante annual membership package. To enter, just follow @VigilanteCrypto on Twitter and then like and retweet this post. And then on June 16th, we'll announce a randomly chosen winner in the thread below. So I'll have that link near the top of the notes down below. So if you're on Twitter, all you need to do is go follow the Crypto Vigilante on Twitter and retweet that post, and you'll be entered to win a subscription. And it will be awarded on June 16th, which is right before we have a massive announcement. As I said, our next crypto pick, a lot of people are waiting for it. A lot of people became millionaires off the last one. If you bought like $5,000 worth when we set at 6 cents, I think that's over $1 million at $16. So a lot of happy subscribers. And so if you can't afford the subscription, definitely enter into that and maybe you'll win it. And then on June 21st, they will be announcing the next pick, and it's going to do amazing, I'm pretty sure, almost positive. And it's very similar to Pirate Chain in that it's going to change the entire game. And we spent months and months looking for, you know, what's the next big thing. And Pirate Chain still is, by the way. It's still at the very beginning, really. So if you haven't got a Pirate Chain, you haven't missed it at all. In fact, you know, it's going to go far higher in my opinion. So get into that. But on June 21st, they will be releasing that to Crypto Vigilante subscribers. I would highly recommend that you sign up for the Crypto Vigilante like now and just get used to it, because there's a lot of information. You're going to have to find out where to go. You don't want to sign up on the day of and then be barraged by all this information and you're confused. It'll take you hours or days to figure out what to do, where to go. And, you know, a lot of people, like the whole world seems to be watching us waiting to hear what this pick is, because we've done so well. Of course, we picked Bitcoin at $3 in 2011. We picked Ethereum at $2 in 15, maybe 16. It's now what, $3,000? And Pirate Chain, of course, 6 cents to now $6 and just getting started. So, a lot of people are going to want to find out about this and try to get into it as early as possible. And right after that, on June 24th and 25th, we're having the TDV Summit. Huge people on it. I can't wait to tell you, but I'm not going to tell you just yet, so stay tuned to that. That's going to be an amazing event with amazing people telling you how to survive and prosper during and after the Great Reset. And we got a bunch of comments on the Crypto Vigilante Twitter. Here's one from Bogsley. I was wondering if one purchased a membership to Crypto Vigilante, does that include the Dollar Vigilante? Yes, it does. Thank you. You guys are the best, and thanks for Sat Yoga, Jeff. It has changed my life, and I'm just beginning. Then Nancy says, yes, it does change your life. I've been a member for over a year. Well worth it. Escape Artist says, you've already changed our life forever. Thanks, Vigilante team. Jason K says, even if I have to pay again for the Crypto Vigilante, it's the best membership on the face of the planet. So that's pretty cool. Yeah, we got a lot of happy subscribers, and we'll just continue on. And hopefully, if you haven't joined us so far, you definitely should. We make absolute fortunes. No one talks about it. You'd think I'd be on the news, right? Like, Berwick did it again. 30,000% gain in 8 months. 30,000%. Like, people can go entire lifetimes and not get 30,000% gain over their entire life. Like, not even close. Maybe 100% or 200% or 500%. 30,000%. But no, they don't tell you. They don't want anyone to know about us. And that's fine with me. I actually don't mind that at all. And someone brought up the Sat Yoga there. If you're into, like, this meditation type stuff, we're actually, you know, that's sort of, like, type of stuff. Definitely check out Sat Yoga. The guy's amazing. And, you know, I've been talking a lot about the health stuff and all that. And I saw this comment. I thought I'd throw it in from RP. FYI, this distilled water fast for 3 days was incredible. Had massive energy upon waking up, like you said. Weird, but great. Also, the hypnotherapy you suggested has created some major breakthroughs. Thanks for sharing your experience, buddy. It helps. And we're going to have some, like, health-related stuff on the TDV Summit. It's going to be all kinds of stuff. How to survive. We're going to do some prepping stuff. We're going to be talking about, you know, which coins to get, cryptos. Talking quite a bit about precious metals. We think those are going to start to take off now. And that's all coming up June 24th and 25th. I'll tell you more about it soon. If you want, just put your email on tdbsummit.com and we'll let you know as soon as we've got the whole website ready and everything. And like I said, get signed up for the Crypto Vigilante. If you can't afford it, sign up on Twitter and make sure you just retweet and follow, and you might win a subscription. And oh, there's Lucy. What are you doing, Lucy? What'd you find there?
Oh, it's just, I don't know what this is. Looks like sort of a, some old tacos or something.
Lucy, let's go back. We got some fresh tacos.
Okay, okay. Just let me finish this up and yeah, we'll get some more tacos in the house. And then I'll give you some cash. Oh, it looks like we're having some ham tacos today. You can go ahead first, Wranglers. And don't mind if I do.
The hemi and past mangoes. There's more later. And I'll give you some cash. Hush.
Let me see that.